This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living, and with me, Joey Yap, a maternal and pediatric nutritionist. We're going to be discussing kids and food today. We are fighting obesity in a big way in Malaysia. Even small tweaks to a child's diet can make a positive impact on their health. But that's not the only issue with children's diets. Some of them are picky eaters. Some of them struggle with eating disorders, and others deal with food allergies. These are only a sampling of what a nutritionist deals with and when it comes to childhood nutrition. So Joey is actually going to shed more light on everything you need to know on children's nutrition. Welcome to the show, Joey. How are you today?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you.
Joey, first of all, could you share with us your experience dealing with children's nutrition and why? I didn't realize that a nutritionist could actually look very particularly to pediatric and maternal.
I started off when I graduated and I was working a bit abroad. I was working with the pediatric ward with the university that was attached to the hospital that I work with. And you could specialise after graduation to what you want to do. And I have an interest on how that effect of a child's life comes at a very early age. And it's how a mom feeds herself. And that really impacts a family. So I started working in Malaysia in 2014 when I came back here. So the diet here is very different from the United Kingdom. So I work with mothers during pre-pregnancies, during pregnancy and postnatal. And I also work with children in schools, like kindergartens, primary schools, because that's where you can actually have an early intervention. And at the same time, I work with orphanages and homes, because that's where you can actually see a lot of undernutrition kids compared to kids in kindergarten and schools where they're actually overweight, but there's a huge contrast with orphanages and homes where they're actually underweight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the WHO never thought it had to deal with overnutrition problem, isn't it, in this era? It was always about malnutrition rather than being overnutrition, yes. Being overfed. So you mentioned that change between working with mothers in the UK and then that transition coming back here. What was how different has it been?
Because of how the structure is in the United Kingdom, there's actually nutritionists and dietitians who goes into homes of moms after delivery to check on them and to see their meal plans during breastfeeding and how it's the development of the infant. So it's very different from here where the nurses will go in to check the weight of a child, but they would not know what the mother eat to breastfeed a child. They will not go specifically, what do you feed yourself daily before you breastfeed a child? Or if they have a toddler, will they go specifically to what they feed a toddler? They'll just say, okay, your child is growing according to the BMI chart set by WHO. That's it.
That's because we assume we know best about nutrition. And the knowledge is coming from, passed down from our grandmothers to our mothers to, you know, what we know. Yeah. How much of that has changed?
That would have evolved quite a bit, because when I was younger, I remember my mom telling me she would feed me porridge, mm-hmm. just porridge when I was 4, 6 months till 12 months. It's probably just porridge and nothing more than that. And it's just carbohydrates. But now that the younger moms or mom-to-be, they are more aware that babies need to be fed a variety of food. So it starts with mashed potatoes, mashed carrots, besides porridge. So that would have evolved from what our grandparents would have passed down mm-hmm. to us.
So in terms of knowledge,
yeah.
Cow's milk has always come under fire when it comes to feeding children milk. There's so much debate out there as to whether or not we should be feeding our children cow's milk. What's your take on that?
For children that's less than a year old, we do not encourage fresh cow's milk or goat's milk, any animal milk product, because fresh milk actually contains higher protein level, and because of the immature digestive system of an infant, you could not feed a high protein level milk to them, because that will actually stresses their kidney and that will cause indigestion in their intestines. That's why they are formulated formulas for a certain age. But I would highly encourage breastfeeding until a year old, because breast milk is still one of the best milk in terms of a source of growth and development. And cow's milk for a year and older is just a complementary to what they eat. Because a year and above, they'll be eating solid food. They'll be joining their family for meals. So it's not really the main source of energy to a child anymore. It's just a complementary to what they eat. Because milk is one of the easiest source for calcium, besides yogurt, cheese, or broccoli, only of the dark green vegetables.
So at 1 year old, if your child decides he doesn't want cow's milk or formula anymore, that's all right then?
It's okay if you make sure that what you feed them meets their requirement. So they need about 1,200 milligram to 1,400 milligram of calcium per day. So if they could get it from that source, such as cheese or yogurt or dark green vegetables, the parent can opt to do that. But you need to know whether your child will be used to eating so much of dark green or cheese or yogurt.
As a nutritionist, what are some of your frustrations when you're dealing with the parents? I know they are struggling to feed their children. What have some of them been?
Okay, I think one is a reluctant to actually prepare meals, because especially when it comes to how we live in the city, we have very busy schedules. Parents just want something fast and quick. And for them, if they were to buy grocery and to come back home to prepare, to them, it's taking up too much time. At the same time, they have helpers, but helpers might submit to what a kid want. A kid like, no, I do not want this. And a helper might just submit to what the kid want, and that's not really a healthy way of promoting a healthy eating habit for a child.
Mm-hmm. So you suggest parents prepare the food themselves for the children?
Yeah, one way they can do is bring the child together to the grocery store and let the child explore, because when you go to a grocery store, you get to see different fresh produce. Let them know what they're eating, so they are aware of the choices, and get the kid involved in preparing the food, because that will actually encourage them to eat it, because a kid will feel, hey, I actually make a choice with my mom or with my dad. I actually put an effort to make the meal. You can help them, you can make them clean the fruits or vegetables, so they will feel a sense of belonging that I actually make this for myself as well.
You make it sound so simple, really.
It is a struggle, honestly.
Why is it children have such an aversion to vegetables?
I think it's the negative feeling that people have, like adults have put on a child. They're like, if you don't eat this, you can't play. So it's this negative feeling that they put on a child. Instead of saying like, no, eat your greens, or if you don't eat it, I will not let you play.
But from the onset, they don't like it.
Okay, so it starts.
Is it the taste? Is it the texture that they dislike? You know, what is it?
Let's go back to infant nutrition. So we start introducing solid food at 6 months. That's very crucial, because that's where they develop taste buds. And if we start introducing just carbohydrates, such as just porridge and oats, they do not get to taste other varieties. So that's when it's really important for mom, during that stage of weaning, to introduce mashed carrots, mashed potatoes, pumpkins, or mashed apples, because that's where they would develop a variety of taste. So if an infant only get porridge at 6 months to 12 months, that's when fussy and picky eaters develop at a year old, because they don't get to taste at a younger age.
Okay, so yep. 6 months, very crucial how you wean them off.
Yes.
When you start weaning them off formula.
Yeah, and milk. That's when you introduce solid food.
Yeah.
So you need to give a variety and don't get discouraged. So at a year old, if they don't want to eat their greens, don't force them, but try to cut it into smaller size, put it in their chicken or put it into their rice so that the rice looks colorful. Mm-hmm. So that will actually give them a positive feeling about food. Like green, it's not so bad. Instead of presenting it just like, hey, this broccolis.
Yeah.
You can mash the broccolis, or you can cut them to smaller pieces and mix it with rice so that it will attract them to eat it.
Okay, but generally some people like vegetables more than the other, even when I look at adults. So are you saying all of this started when we were 6 months and weren't introduced solids the best way?
No, so some adults are still picky eaters.
Yes.
When it comes to vegetables. It's just because of the environment we're in. We get choices where we have the liberty of choosing what we want to eat. And I think when we're younger, some of us probably have a negative feeling of vegetables because of how our parents would have been very forceful on, you must eat your greens if you want to grow. So that's not a very It's more on psychologically, you're putting a negative emotion into greens.
Okay. So it's a language that we're using as well.
Yeah, so you need to always reinforce that greens are good, but in a positive way. So you can cut the vegetables into... For younger kids, you can always make it as an activity. Bring a variety. So this is what I do with kids in kindergartens. I'll bring a variety of vegetables, like carrots and then broccolis and tomatoes and then some carrot sticks, some cucumber stick. And we'll play a game, like, can you make me a stick man? So they will have to pick a certain shape to make a figure, or could you make a flower? So when they know that, hey, vegetables are fun... And that attracts them to eat it because they are actually developing their sensory skills by helping to arrange how they want to arrange it on the plate.
Okay, what about fruit?
Fruits.
When should it be introduced?
So fruit should be introduced a year and above. Because fruits contain sugar, you do not want to introduce sugar at an early age, because that will actually develop fussy eaters. Because if they like the taste of sugar, it's very hard for them to taste other flavors in food.
So fruits only at 12 months?
12 months and above. However, during the weaning period, in terms of introducing solid food, there is 6 to 12 months. Some people give mashed apples. Yeah, because apples are not too sweet. Or bananas. Bananas are sweet, but they are easy to
chew.
So the recommendation is about one portion of fruit per day for infant below a year old. So one portion could be a small apple or one piece of banana.
Okay.
Because we don't want to introduce too much sugar at a very young age, because that will actually change their perception of food in terms of taste.
Sure. So speaking of sugar, should we even introduce sugar at all? We are speaking to Joey Yap, a maternal and pediatric nutritionist, on kids and food. We'll be back up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. It's Health and Living. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Joey Yap, a maternal and pediatric nutritionist, in the studio with us. We are discussing nutrition and your children, of course. Food, always a problem for some of us trying to get our children to eat. They're obviously not eating balanced diets anymore because many of us don't cook at home. There's so much temptation outside as far as fast food is concerned. And we have a growing problem of obesity amongst children in the country. So getting some tips and advice from Joey on how best to do this. Some of us have passed that age, Joey. 6 months, they're all 15 years of age and 18 now. cannot go back and turn back the clock. But is there a way of changing things around to get them to eat?
So are we talking
about... Or undo the psychology that's already developed as far as vegetables are concerned, for an example?
Are we talking about toddler's age or are we talking about schoolers?
Like, so let's go to schoolers. We'll come back to the toddlers in just a short while.
Okay. So for kids who are going to school at the age of 6 to 17 years old, so we're talking about children and teenagers, get them involved in the meal preparation. They're old enough to actually make choices. So go to the grocery store with them and always start with the fresh produce. Don't go to the aisle of junk food or the processed food. Start with fresh produce. That's the reason why whenever you go to a grocery store, the front of a grocery store is always fruits and vegetables and then meat before the aisle of processed food. There's a reason why it's laid out that way. So take your time, scroll, like go down the aisle and choose the fruits together or the vegetables together with your children. And get them involved in preparation of the food. Encourage them to voice their opinion, like how would they like to prepare it. Sometimes preparing in a different way will help them to get their required vegetables intake. Instead of just steam it all the time, we can grill it. There's a healthy way of doing it. Try to avoid deep fried vegetables. That's not very healthy.
Yeah. What about sugar? We were speaking about sugar just now. Should we introduce sugar at all?
So sugar is actually natural in fruits, and it's also in carbohydrates. So if you're talking about added sugar, we have to limit our intakes of biscuits, cakes, chocolates, or fizzy drinks. And that should not be introduced at a very young age.
When you say very young, how old are you referring to?
We're talking about like a year old to toddler's age. Because the thing about toddlers is when they go to kindergarten, there are always birthday parties. There are always kids celebration. That's where fizzy drinks will come up. That's where processed foods such as biscuits, cakes, jello are in that kind of situation. So we have to make sure that the lunch boxes that you pack for your child before they go to kindergarten, it's of a healthier variety. So they know that, hey, this is what mommy packed for me. And it's healthy, it's good for me. And they have to know that the mom eats it too. It's not only them. So you can start from when a year and above, they need to eat together with the parents. Even though with our busy schedules, we need to make sure we sit down with our kids and eat together. So if they see their mom and dad eating like the greens and the fruits, they eventually will pick up that habit as well.
Okay. Fizzy drinks, is it a no-no? I mean, it's impossible to say no to fizzy drinks. So what's an acceptable amount?
So for children of 4 to 6 years old, the intake of sugar per day is only 19 grams, which is about 5 teaspoons. However, one can of fizzy drink is about 9 teaspoons of sugar. That would have exceeded the recommended intake for a 4 to 6
years. The whole day.
Yep. Mm-hmm. However, you can't avoid fizzy drinks. So what you need to do is really educating your child, like, why is fizzy drinks not good for you? So they need to be aware of the choices they make.
Okay. Coffee. Can we introduce coffee at all to children?
So coffee is actually caffeine. It's a stimulant. So it actually causes jittery, nervousness, increased heart rate, trouble in sleeping. And certain type of fizzy drinks such as Coke or Pepsi will contain caffeine. And it's not recommended for children because of how the size of a child is much smaller than an adult. So the effect will be much obvious compared to an adult. So a child will be jittery and it'd be really hyperactive. And that's not really what we want in a child. And caffeine is a stimulant, so this is not healthy for children because they won't be able to focus in class.
Hydration. How much water? I mean, we know adults need about 2 liters every day.
Yep.
What about the children?
So for a child 4 to 8 years old, you need about a liter. A liter of water will be 5 glasses. And a child of 9 to 12 years old will need about 1.5 liters. That is about 7 glasses a day. And then 13 years onwards until adults, you need about 2 litres, which is 8 to 10 glasses.
Okay, so there you go. That's the water amount. Junk food is unavoidable. Junk food is everywhere. Sometimes I feel bad that I have deprived my children of some amount of junk food. It's almost like comfort food, you know, sometimes.
Yeah.
How do you limit that as well?
What you can do is not to completely take junk food out of their diet, because that will actually develop a craving. And when a child craves, you will not know what your child's eating in school. And when you restrict them at home, they might be overindulged when they're in school or with their friends because they don't get to eat that at home. So what you can do is have a day where you're like, okay, once a week you can have a bag of potato chips, but it's only once a week. And always give them a choice, like make sure that they're always fresh vegetable sticks and fresh fruits are cut up and always prepared in the fridge. So when they reach out for the fridge, there's always a choice of a healthier alternative compared to a bag of chips. So another thing is parents could limit when it comes to grocery shopping. Limit the amount of junk food you're getting.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, my take is just don't buy it.
Yeah, just don't buy it.
Because if it's not at home, you just don't eat it, right?
Yeah.
And I hope that will develop into a good habit eventually.
So you need to start slow. So if you're in a family where you're used to just having a bag of potato chips, or no, like 2-3 bags, you need to start lessening the amount, eventually taking it completely off the grocery list. So eventually not giving them an option of reaching out for a bag of potato chips at home.
Supplements is something that's often debated about, even amongst the adults. But do you think children need supplements?
Healthy children actually get all their vital minerals and vitamins from the food itself that we prepared. However, if a child is not growing according to the WHO chart, is not developing or just failed to grow, they would need to talk to their doctors about suitable multivites for their children. And children with allergies or children that have certain medical conditions, that's when the pediatrician might ask them to take extra supplements.
Mm-hmm. So only when necessary?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Spice. I think in Indian homes, we eat a lot of spice. Is there a particular age we should be introducing spice? Because, I mean, I just remember, you know, giving them a tiny bit of dal and a tiny bit of, just introducing it little by little, you know, as just so they develop the taste till they were able to eat it on their own.
At what age? About a year and above when they start eating solid food?
That doesn't matter, actually. Yeah, so whenever we eat and then they look at us and they want to try something, then I'll just mash up a tiny bit of rice with a tiny bit of spice and just, you know, I mean, dal or whatever, and put it in their mouth for them to taste.
Yeah.
Some will like it. Sometimes they like it. Sometimes they don't. But just every now and again, I just keep doing that. I mean, whenever. I mean, 8 months, 9 months, 10 months, depending on whether the child wants to try or not.
Yeah, so I think that it's a very good way of gauging whether your child is okay with it. So like you mentioned, like in Indian families, they are dal and curry. So a small amount is good because spices such as chili actually upsets the digestive system. So it's good if you introduce a bit of it. Try not to introduce like dal and curry at one time. If you want to introduce something new, like in terms of spices, introduce dal and not the curry. And if you introduce curry, not the dal. So it's one step at a time. Mm-hmm. So that you know whether the child is really sensitive. If let's say the child have an upset stomach, you know that that is the only thing that you have introduced new in that meal.
So the recommendation is 12 months and up?
Yeah, a year will be a safer option because their digestive tract would have been developed already compared to 12 months and below.
Okay. Many struggle with fussy eaters. Is there a simple advice that we can all go to and just get our children eating?
Most importantly is getting the family to eat together. Children are easy to be impressed. And eating together encourage them to reach out for what the mom and dad would want to eat. Like you mentioned how when you eat something, your child would want to try it.
Mm-hmm.
So eating together is a very easy way of preventing fussy eaters. And let's say if you already have a fussy eater, try not to give in. Because giving in will make the child realize, hey, I can have it my way. So that's how a fussy eater can develop this habit.
Okay. So some of us then, when we have fussy eaters, we go all out of our way to make sure. And you're worried, right? You're worried. You want your child to make sure that you want to make sure your child is nourished. And so I remember spending up to 45 minutes distracting my child, trying to get the food into her mouth. And it will take me about 45 minutes to finish a small bowl of, you know, whatever, a meal. And I had to do that, and it became a chore because it had to be done 3 times a day. Sometimes it would go up to a whole hour. When do you stop?
So the recommended timing when it comes to feeding a child is 30 minutes. So in that period of 30 minutes, if a child doesn't want to eat, then stop. There's no point of forcing it into the mouth because a child would just associate eating as not an enjoyable habit. And we do not want them to think that eating is not an enjoyable habit. So 30-minute mark is a good gauge when you stop. As long as when you visit the doctors, the pediatricians, and the child is growing according to the BMI chart set by the WHO according to their age, you don't have to worry about missing if they don't finish the food on the plate. Just make sure that there are snacks in between.
Healthy
ones. So the kind of snacks you will encourage, like, just make carrot sticks or cut up fruits that are in small portion so that they will have snacks in between, a healthy snacks in between, the kind of things that they have missed out during feeding. Because it will stress you out if you were to feed from up to an hour.
It did.
Yeah.
And question is, when do you stop feeding them and get them to start attempting to eat on their own.
So at a year and above, you would have specially designed spoon and fork for a child. Let them play with their food. It's going to get messy from a year to 3 years old, but that is the best part of it because they develop their own sensory, their motor skills that food is enjoyable. By an age of 3 years old, they'll be able to be very independent to just eat by themselves. So just make sure that they always sit together as a family to eat. So it becomes a habit like, oh, meal time is family time. And make it enjoyable. Have conversations so that they don't associate meal time as running around, my mom is chasing me to feed me.
Okay. Are there children who have eating disorders? And this is more serious.
Yeah.
I mean, this is just not if your child is a fussy eater.
Eating disorder actually is more prevalent in teenagers these days. Whereas for children, and when you're talking about younger kids, it's more about compulsive eating. Compulsive eating meaning they eat whenever they see food. Mm-hmm. So there is no stop to that. And parents, they will just give whatever they want because they just want to keep the child happy. So that could cause obesity because they're overeating.
But is that psychological or are they genuinely hungry?
Compulsive eating could be a psychological thing because it could be one way of children coping with boredom. When they're bored, they're like, oh, I can reach out for food. Because children are of high energy level, you need to make sure they're engaged. Bring them out, let them play so that they're not stuck at home and reaching out for food or reaching out for that iPad, which I don't agree with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of which, a lot of parents now put the children in front of an iPad, let something run, and then they find it's the easiest way that children consume food. What's the downside to that?
The downside would be you're not actually having communication because communication skills develop at a very young age and it starts from family. When you put an iPad in front of a child so that they're watching something and so that you could feed them easily, that's not healthy because you're not developing a relationship with your child. You're not developing communication skills with your child. How would a child tell you what he wants or he don't want if his eyes are just fixed on the screen? Mm-hmm.
And they're not, it's not mindful eating, is it? I mean, they don't really know what's going in or, I don't know, are they tasting stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because you're distracted.
Yeah. When you're watching an iPad, you're distracted because your brain is trying to focus what's going on the screen. So whatever you eat, you don't really process, oh, this is how tomatoes taste like, or this is how carrot tastes like. So when it comes to feeding children or young children especially, you need to take away all the distractions. Eating is a family time, is a bonding time. You get to talk about your school or get to know about what mom and dad did today because that's very important that the child develop a positive attributes to eating. Whereas if you put an iPad in front of them, they're like, oh, eating means watching whatever that's mm-hmm. on the iPad.
Okay. Gluten-free diets, there seems to be a bit of an obsession or it's becoming an obsession amongst many parents. And recently there was a death of a baby due to malnutrition because the parents put the child on a very restrictive diet like a gluten-free diet. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, parents need to understand that the requirement of nutrients for children and adults are very different. Because of the size and the rapid growth rate of children, they need high energy calories. Like they need about 1,200 to 1,400 calories per day for young children. And gluten-free diet actually takes away a type of protein. So gluten is actually a type of protein in whole grain, in wheat. And you take away this nutrient, they're not getting the type of complete nutrition they need for growth. That's why they will not meet the required calories and that causes malnutrition. So like for a child, they really need a balanced diet in terms of whole grain, grains, and then they need protein from meat and vegetables. They shouldn't go on any special like no carbs diet or gluten-free diet because that's not right for their body. Their body need every vitamin minerals to grow according to the chart by WHO.
Unless, of course, there is a genuine intolerance to
yeah.
certain things.
Yeah, so for people who are intolerant to gluten, especially celiac disease, but they're not very prevalent in Asia. They're more prevalent in the United Kingdom and the United States is because of the genetic makeup of the Caucasian, whereas in Asia it's very, very rare. So we shouldn't go on gluten-free diet.
There's been a rise in food allergies and intolerances. Are these sort of self-diagnosed trends, or are people genuinely, or you know, are people genuinely testing for food allergies? You can test for food allergies, yes. But I'm just wondering whether or not this is just something that, you know, parents are observing and then tell the child, no, you know, don't eat that, or don't eat this. What's the right way forward?
Talk to your pediatrician. Usually, if a child have allergy, the first symptom is they will have rashes, they couldn't breathe, and they will need to see a pediatrician to get a blood sample to do a food allergy test. In terms of self-diagnose, sometimes it's just because the parents does not like it, and then they feel that, oh, if I don't like it, my child will not like it. Or if I have an allergy to peanut, my child might have an allergy. But that's not entirely true. So the best way to get tested out is actually to go visit a pediatrician and do an allergy test.
Making a change from an unhealthy to a healthy diet now, after listening to this, maybe some people may want to change. It can be difficult to do it all at one go. What would be your advice to make this change gradually?
Yeah, so start small. Do not completely re-ram your whole grocery list. For example, if they always reach out for a candy bar, why don't you just not get a candy bar when you go to the grocery store with your kid? Just don't go to that aisle at all. And also, people who like candy bar might like other sweet things. So you have to start gradually eliminating all this from the grocery list. So it's not an extreme where you just take everything away from it. Because when there's an extreme, there will be a craving. And children are smart. They will go outside and get it.
Yes, of course. And a lot of food which is not healthy is being served in our school canteens. And if we don't take some kind of ownership of our children's diets, I mean, that starts at home, then... I mean, you can blame government as much as you want, but it really starts at home, don't you think?
Yes, it really starts at home. So when I was younger, I'm really thankful that my mum, she have always prepared my lunch boxes until I was in secondary. So all the way, I'm really thankful for that. But she also limit the amount of pocket money she give me. So when you don't have the liberty of buying what you want in the school canteen, that you just have to like, okay, my mum prepared food, so this is what I'm going to have. Mm-hmm. So try not to give too much of a pocket money, a liberty for them, because then they would choose to buy whatever they want to eat in the school canteen.
Okay.
I think there is some improvement over the years. I've recently visited a primary school, and there are some improvements in terms of variety of fruits. There are more fresh cut fruits now being on sale in the school canteen. Slowly but surely, the government is doing something. But end of the day, it's really the parents and the caretaker to make the initiative to pack something healthier for them to eat.
Your advice on food and children?
Children actually enjoy eating, so always have a positive attributes to eating. Give them the choice. Don't ask them what's for dinner, but like, here's the dinner. Which one would you want? So they both options will be a healthy option, but they just need to pick an option.
Thank you very much for joining us today. That was Joey Yap, a maternal and pediatric nutritionist, talking to us about children and their food on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.